Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Dalad. We're on Daf Kuf Mem Gimel Beis. 10 lines from the bottom. Says the Gemara, V'savar Rabbi Yehuda. Does Rabbi Yehuda really hold Stam Aser? That unspecified would be Aser? We're speaking about if one notices juice freely flowing from his fruit on Shabbos. And we're speaking about the types of fruit which are at least occasionally used for production of a juice. For instance, remaining pomegranates. The Chacham say one cannot partake in that juice for concern that he might be tempted to actually continue that process and squeeze those fruits and do a malacha. Which malacha is related to the malacha of disha, threshing, which is extracting the grain from the husk, from the encasement. So he's extracting one element from the other. Likewise here, when he produces juice out of squeezing the fruit, that's considered to be extraction of mashkin, of a beverage, from a food item, which is a malacha on Shabbos. So Chum say, you cannot partake in that juice, lest he be tempted to squeeze the pomegranate to produce more juice. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, it depends. What was his intention initially when he stored the pomegranate? Was it for the sake of lo'oichlen? He regarded them as foodstuffs, meaning he had no intention to produce them into juice. In that case, there's no concern that he's going to squeeze them further. But lemashkin, if he stored them for the sake of producing juice, then indeed Rabbi agrees there's a concern that he might squeeze them on Shabbos. Now Rabbi additionally said that even listam, even if the storage was unspecified, you know, specific purpose and intent in mind, it was unspecified. It wasn't l'achila, it wasn't l'mashkin. There as well, we're concerned that he might decide to squeeze them on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, v'savar b'yuda. Does he really hold that stam asur, even unspecified, is asur? We're concerned that he might decide to produce juice. V'atnan, but haven't we learned in the Mishnah? Chalav ha'isha, the milk of a woman, metame l'rotzen, v'shalay l'rotzen, has the ability to be metame, whether the milk was extracted willingly or unwillingly. Rashi explains matame here means machshir, that it can enable a fruit or a vegetable, for instance, to be makabel tuma. We know it needs to first get wet via one of the seven primary beverages, wine, water, blood, milk. So if this milk falls on a fruit, it is machshir that fruit. It makes it susceptible, enables it to be makabel tuma. But that's only because we regard this thing as a mashke. This milk has a status of a beverage and therefore has that ability. Likewise, it is mekabel tumah itself. The milk itself is mekabel tumah because it is considered to be a mashke. So that's even if it was shaloi l'rotzen. L'rotzen means willfully. So it came out and the person was content, was satisfied, was pleased with the fact that the milk came out. Or even shaloi l'rotzen, he was displeased about the presence of the milk. Nevertheless, this milk has inherent significance, is considered to be a mashke nonetheless. So again, chalav ha'isha metame l'ratzayin v'shaloi l'ratzayin. So either way, it is considered to be chashav as significant and has a din of a mashke. Rashi brings a pasuk, we find that chalav is called mashke, so therefore it has that ability. Continues the Mishnah, chalav behema, however, animal milk, that's less significant, eina metame l'ratzayin, that can only be metame if it is l'ratzen, it is willfully, it's something which a person is content, he's pleased about the presence of this milk. In that case, it has significance of a mashke. But if he's displeased about the presence, about the extraction of this milk from his animal, then it does not attain the status of a mashke. So this is the shita of the Tanakam. Om Rabbi Akiva, that's not the case. Just as the chalav of a woman attains the status of mashke, whether l'rotzen or shaloi l'rotzen, likewise, the one of an animal. The milk is considered to be significant by its own right, whether or not the person is content and pleased about the presence of this milk or not. We're going to learn this from a kavachim. Amar Rabbi Akiva, kavachim. Who? Uma chalav ha'isha. Since we find that woman's milk, she'ena miyuchad elektanim, it's only designated for small, for infants, it has a limited potential, limited use. Nevertheless, metame l'rotzen, v'shaloi l'rotzen. It can be metame whether there's a rotzen here, it's willful, or it's unwillful. So since it's, despite the fact that it has limited use, we say that it has a din of a mashka, whether or not the person is pleased about its presence. Certainly, cholov abeim shemiyuchad bein lektanim bein gdolim, animal milk, which is designated to be used by ktanim and by adults, it has that broad use, broad application. Certainly, it should be considered higher in value and more significant. Ein din isn't illogical. Shiyatami bein lerotzoin, that should have the ability to be tami whether it is here lerotzoin ubein shalei lerotzoin, or whether it's here unwillfully. Amrulai, so they responded to him. You can't compare the chol of an isha to the chol of a behem. The chol of an isha has more significance. It has an added benefit. Why? If we understand that the chol of an isha is tami even shalei l'ratzon, you know why? Shadama gafasa tami, because the blood which flows from a wound of this woman is also tummy. So that also has a din of a mashka. It's one of the seven mashkin dam. So since we find that the blood oozing out of a woman's wound is considered to be a mashkin, despite the fact that that blood is certainly is presumed to be shalei l'ratzon. This wound was inflicted shalei l'ratzon. It wasn't done willfully. Nevertheless, we find that the dam of this wound has the ability to makabotuma, the ability to be machshel kabotuma, is considered to be a mashkin. So therefore, the milk as well has the same din. Why? What's the connection between milk and blood? Rashi explains that the milk is actually produced from the woman's blood. It's a byproduct of her dam. Rashi brings the Gemara dam nekar, the dam clouds. Vanasa cholav, it transitions into milk. So if we find this concept that the blood of this isha has the ability to entame whether or not there is rots in there, likewise the milk, which is a byproduct of her dam, should also have that halacha. That's unique by isha, as opposed to behema, says the Gemara. Again, imti mechalav isha shalei l'rotz, and should damag of fasa tamik, because we find the blood of her wound is tamik. Yitame chol of behema, should we say likewise by behema that the cholav should be matami shaloi l'rotzen, even when he's displeased about the presence of that cholav? Shadama gafasa tar, since we find that a behema does not have that advantage as isha, the dam of the wound of a behema is tar. Rashi brings that only the dam of shechita is considered to be significant enough and considered like a beverage, like a mashke, but the dam coming from a wound of a behema is tar, is not regarded as a mashke. So since we find that a behema has that disadvantage, likewise, the cholav of the behema, which is shalei l'ratzon, also doesn't have the ability to be considered a mashke. Amar Lancer Rekiva responded, you're comparing milk to blood. We find there's a distinction between the two things. Machmarani b'chelav mibadam. We find a stringency, a chumrah, that cholav b'chelav mibadam, that milk has above and beyond blood. Why? Shachelav l'refuah tami. If one milks an animal for the sake of refuah, to relieve it of its milk and preventing from getting sick. So the point is that he wants the milk, but it's not really l'rotzen. He doesn't really need the milk for its inherent purpose, of its own sake. He's doing it to relieve the animal of its supply. Nevertheless, it's tummy, because that is also considered l'ratzon. He's doing it willfully. He's pleased about the extraction of the milk from his animal. So that's regarding cholof. V'hamekez l'refuah tar. If one does hakaza, that's the bloodletting. So he releases some blood from his animal, l'refuah, for the sake of its therapeutic value, for l'refuah. It's tar, because we spoke earlier that the blood which emanates from a wound of an animal doesn't have the ability to be considered a beverage, a mashke. So you see that distinction. It's very clear that cholav is unrelated to dam. Meaning, you're working with a premise that the base reason for cholav to be considered a mashke is since it's a byproduct of blood, and therefore it's meant to be compared one to the other. Says Rabbi Akiva, we find a clear halacha. We draw that distinction between the two things. Apparently, the reason why cholav is tamei, Cholav is considered a mashka is unrelated to the fact that it's a byproduct of the blood, but rather it's because of its own inherent intrinsic value. Therefore, you can't compare milk to blood. And likewise, by this behemoth, although the blood which is oozing out of its wound does not have the ability to be considered a mashka, but the milk which was extracted, produced from the animal, can be metame, even if it's shalei l'rotzon, because of its own intrinsic value. It is significant by on its own right. It's unrelated to the status of its blood. Another point we find here, that milking for a fool, even though it's not really truly l'rotzon, he's doing it to relieve the animal of its supply. Nevertheless, we regard this milk as a mashka, because at the end of the day, there's some willfulness, there's some rotzon, he's somewhat content about extracting the milk, he's doing it for a fool, that's considered l'rotzon. So likewise, when there's milk being produced from an animal, even shaloi l'rotzon, that is also considered to be a mashka, because the point here is we find that milk is special. It has significance by its own, on its own right. It's inherently useful and significant, therefore, it has a din of a mashka, according to Rabbi Akiva. Amar Leis, they responded, you can't compare a case where it's willful and a case where it's not willful, because we find that there is a difference between l'ratzayin and shalei l'ratzayin. Amar Leis, salit zeisim v'anov miyuchichu, baskets filled with olives or grapes, they'll prove the point here. Shamashkin ha'yetzim hen l'ratzayin, juice which runs out of them, l'ratzayin, when he's content and pleased about them, t'meim, then they are considered to be a mashka and they're tummy. Shiloi l'ratzayin, but if it's unwillfully, it's not l'ratzayin, then those mashkim are not reckoned with. They're tar. So you see clearly that there is a difference between l'ratzayin and shiloi l'ratzayin. Likewise, by the milk produced from the animal, we're going to differentiate between milk, which was here l'ratzayin, something which he's content and pleased with its presence, as opposed to a case where the milk is here shalei l'ratzayin, in which case we don't give it a chashivas, a significant of a mashke. Let's stop for a quick moment and just take stock of this discussion regarding liquids that have a din that they're considered mashkim. They can be machshir something like kabal tumah if they fall on a fruit and a vegetable. They enable it, they make it susceptible to tumah. So we have milk, we have blood coming out of a makah. So when it comes to dam makah, all agree that the dam makah of an isha is considered to be a mashka, the dam makah of a behema is not. Regarding milk, so the milk of a isha, all agree, is considered a mashka, whether it's l'ratzayin or even shalei l'ratzayin. It has inherent chashivas. Regarding the milk of a behema, by machlokes, according to Rabbi Akiva, regardless of ratzayin or not, it is inherently chashav, it is inherently significant, it has a din of a mashka. According to Chachamim, this halacha is strictly applicable to when the milk is here l'ratzayin, he's pleased and content about the presence of the milk. In that case, it has chashivas and significance like a mashka. Continues the Gemara. Okay, getting back to our discussion regarding producing juice on Shabbos. So we're working with this assumption that according to Rabbi Yehuda, even when he gathered, when he stored the pomegranates, bistam, just unspecified, without any specific intention in mind, we're worried about schita. Why? Because apparently, when juice is produced from this pomegranate, it has chashiva, it's considered to be mashkin, and therefore we regard the pomegranate as though it's slated for that. It's awaiting that production, and therefore we're concerned that he's going to squeeze it. So let's see the Gemara. My lav l'ratzon d'nichle. So getting back to the Chacham who responded from the baskets filled with grapes and olives, and they said, look, we're going to prove from there there's a difference between ratzin and shalai l'ratzin. Juice which flows out of those fruits, if it's l'ratzin, if he's pleased about the juice's presence, then it is tummy. Otherwise, it's not. Now, what is the definition of l'ratzin, if it's willfully, or shalai l'ratzin, unwillfully? What is the exact definition? My love, shall we not say, l'ratzin means the nichalei. He's pleased, he's content about the presence of the juice. And therefore, it's considered to be a mashke. Shaloi l'ratzin, What does it mean when we say shaloi l'ratzin, which is not considered to be a beverage? Bistama, when it's unspecified. So he doesn't have an opposing opinion, but he doesn't have that positive element. He's not pleased with the presence of the juice. He doesn't need it. He's indifferent to its presence. And we find that since it's merely stam, this juice is not regarded, is not reckoned with, doesn't have a derva mashke. This is going to be a kasha on what we said earlier. Why? Uma zeisim v'anovim. If we find that regarding zeisim v'anovim, olives and grapes, they are certainly prime candidates for squeezing and crushing and for production of juice. Nevertheless, shaloi l'ratzen v'loi klum, when there's no positive element of ratzen, he's not actively content and pleased about the presence of this juice. V'loi klum, it's nothing, it's not reckoned with. This juice does not attain a status of mashkin. Although we're speaking about very significant type of juice, grape juice, oil. Tusim reminim, the lab is chita ninu, like koshkin. Certainly when it comes to tusim, these are the berries, remind the pomegranates, the lab is chita ninu, they're not generally standing for the production of juice. Although occasionally people will use them to produce juice, but they're not inherently designated for that. Like koshkin, certainly over there, when there's merely a stam machshava, there's an unspecified intent, he's storing them without any specific plan in mind. Of course, in that case, we should not consider the juice which flows out of these remainim as having a status of mashkin. So since that's the case, then we could assume that the status of the remain is not slated for the production of that juice. That juice is not really reckoned with when he's merely storing together the remainim b'stama, when he doesn't really intend on giving significance to that juice. So the point is that we have a kasha on what we said earlier. Rav Yehuda says that even when he stored the fruit b'stama with any specific intent in mind, we're concerned that perhaps he's going to squeeze them. Here we see that unless he has a specific, positive feeling towards this juice, the juice which is coming out of the remainim, they're not regarded as mashkin. So likewise, we should not consider these remainim as though they're slated to produce this type of juice. This mashkin, it doesn't have any chashivas, it's not any significance of mashkin. So certainly, it's not logical to say that the remain is slated to be crushed into this insignificant juice. Rather, we should say, no, the remain is meant to be eaten. Therefore, there's no concern of squeezing on Shabbos in a case of stam. Says the Gemara, no, let's reinterpret the words of the Mishnah. When the Chacham responded and said, baskets of olives which produce juice, that juice is only considered and reckoned with when there is a ratzain. What does the ratzain mean? We don't need that positive element of his contentment and his happiness regarding the presence of this juice. The ratzain is bestama, even when it's unspecified, undefined. He is neither pleased nor displeased. He's somewhere in the middle. He's just parv. That is already considered enough to grant this juice a chashivas of mashke. So that's the pshat l'ratzen. Shaloi l'ratzen, which is considered a non-mashke, is the goli adaite. Speaking about when he revealed his intention, the Omar, he said, lo inichali, I don't want it. I'm displeased with the presence of this juice. I really don't want it here. So it's a negative element that's being inserted. And certainly in that case, we don't consider this to be a mashke, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah. But certainly when it's a case of stam, when he has no defined plan or intent or machshava, it's nor positive nor negative, in that case certainly we regard the juice as a mashke, and therefore we consider this pomegranate here as though it's slated for the production of that juice and its concern of schita on Shabbos. Vibay same alternatively, Shani Sali Zesim Anovim. The baskets of the Zesim Anovim are different. Why? Kivin the Ibud Kaimi. Since the juice which is dripping there is going to waste, it's just dropping on the floor, Meikar. Therefore, initially, Afkuri Mafkuri Lahu. He simply abandons the juice. He has no Hashivas significance for this and use for this juice. Therefore, it doesn't grant chashivas to it. It doesn't attain the status of a mashkin. But certainly when it's stama, when it's undefined, unspecified, even Jews coming from Rimonim, perhaps, are considered to be a mashka, and therefore, those Rimonim are intended for that purpose. They're slated to be crushed, at least by some people, occasionally, and therefore we're concerned that he's going to crush those Rimonim to produce this mashka. Therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that there's a concern of Shechita on Shabbos. So in summary, the Gemara presented for us, this was really related to yesterday's daf, Shmuel presented for us three categories of fruits. We have the Zeisim Anavim, which are primary candidates for squeezing. Rashi says they're primarily used for that purpose, to produce juice. All agree, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabban agree, that in any case, whether he stored them for eating purposes or for production of liquid, all agree there's a concern of squeezing them on Shabbos. Regarding the Sha'ar Peres, other types of fruits which are never crushed for their beverage value, all agree there's no concern of schita there. What about the middle category of tusim v'rimonim, which are occasionally produced into juice? We have a machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. In a case where he stored them lo'oichlin, for the sake of using them as food items, eating them directly, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no concern of schita. According to Chachamim, there is a concern. And therefore, when there's juice flowing out of them, he can't use that juice for concern that he might actually squeeze that fruit. Rabbi Yehuda agrees if he stored them for the sake of juice production, lamashkin, or even for stam, if he had no specific intention of mind, it was undefined. In this case, we're concerned that he might be tempted to actually squeeze those remaining, since occasionally people do that to produce juice. And the chiddush we learned today is that even stam, even when it's unspecified, he simply is storing them without any specific intention of mind. We deem those Rimonim as though they are slated for juice production, and therefore we're concerned about Shechita on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Ashkechan Rabbi Yehuda, the Moedil Rabbanan Bezeisim Vanavim. So we find, we have a braisa discussed yesterday, we find that Rabbi Yehuda agrees lechachamim regarding Zeisim Vanavim, since they are primarily used for juice production, that there is a concern of Shechita. Rabbi Yehuda agrees lechachamim. And therefore, he can't use the free-flowing juice, which is emanating from his Zeisim Anavim, lest he go ahead and be tempted to squeeze them further. Rabbanu d'moed l'Rabbi Yehuda, b'sha'ar peiros min olam. Now, how do we know regarding that other category of other fruits which are never used to produce juice? How do we know the Chacham agree to Rabbi Yehuda in that case? There's no concern of schita. And if there's juice flowing out of those types of fruits, he can partake and use them on Shabbos. Minol, where do we find this? Does the Chacham agree? The Sanhedrin learned in the Brisa. Soichtin, one may actually squeeze these types of fruits which are never used to produce juice. Soichtin, but pegoin, Rashi says prunes, belaz. Ubepreshin, that seems to be quince. Ubozrodin, some other type of fruit, which Rashi describes as being fruits which are never used for juice production. So you can actually squeeze them. There's no malach. Why is there no malacha? Because the malacha here is related to Disha, where he's extracting a grain portion out of the skin portion, out of the stalks, out of the shell of the grain. So he's producing something. He's taking the edible portion, separating from the inedible portion. He's extracting one element from the other. The edible element from the inedible element. Likewise, when he squeezes Zeisim Vanavim, he's producing something. The juice coming out has a significance of mashkin, of a beverage. So he's taking a food item, an olive, and he's producing a mashkin, a beverage. He's extracting the element, one type of element, from another type of element. That's considered to be producing something that is similar to malach of disha. As opposed to squeezing fruits which are never used for this purpose, the mashkin which emanates are not considered to be beverages. Therefore, he's not extracting one element from the other. He's not producing anything. He's simply, it's like he's cutting an apple into two. He's separating one element of that food from the other element. He's not producing anything. Therefore, there's no malacha whatsoever. So that's regarding these types of fruits which are never used for juice production. The Brisa continues, Ava lo be rimonim. But one may not squeeze pomegranates. Why? Because it is customary, at least on occasion, to use those pomegranates for their juice value. Therefore, it is considered as though he is producing something. He's producing a mashkin from an oichel. The Brisa continues, v'shal beis Menashe bar Menachem. In the home of Menashe bar Menachem, indeed, they used to have this custom, they would squeeze remainim for the sake of their juice. This is during the weekday, so we see that it is customary, at least on occasion, to squeeze these things, and therefore, on Shabbos, one may not do so. So we see that there's no concern when it comes to other types of fruits, the prunes, the quinces, since they are never used for the beverage value, there's no concern of schita. Indeed, this supports our contention that the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Yehuda by the Sha'ar Peres, there's no concern of schita. Says the Gemara, Umimai de Rabbanani, how do you know that the author of this Braisa de Rabbanan, Dilma Rabbi Yehuda, perhaps this Braisa is Rabbi Yehuda. We're looking for a source that the Rabbanan hold of this, how do you know? Says the Gemara, but do you have a Rabbi Yehuda? Okay, let the Braisa be Rabbi Yehuda. This will still support our premise. Why? Aim with the Shamas Le Rabbi Yehuda, when did we hear Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned? Yotzu Ma'atzman, regarding free-flowing juice that just came out on their own, uninstigated. He says, well, there's no concern of schita because nobody squeezes a prune for its juice sake. Now, just incidentally, the Mefarshim point out that all these halachis, that we determine whether or not a fruit is destined for its juice, that depends on the minhag hamakom. So zeis anavim seem to be absolute, but other types of fruit, that depends on the minhag, what's the practice, the common practice in that location, and whether it's slated for juice production or not. The Gemara here cites these examples. Apparently, in that time and place, these examples fit the description. So in any case, let's get back to the Gemara of Tehevin Am Rabbi Yehuda. Let the Braisa be Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll still have a raya that the Chacham agree that one does not have a concern when it comes to these other types of fruits, lest they go ahead and squeeze them. Why? When do we hear that Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about schita? When the juice merely flows out on its own. It flows out of those other types of fruits uninstigated. We say, there's no concern that he's going to squeeze them. Why would he squeeze a fruit which nobody squeezes? Do we then hear that Rabbi Yehuda will hold, one can actually go ahead and manually squeeze those fruits? We never heard that Rabbi Yehuda speaks about that. And this Braisa permits doing that. So apparently you must say, since those types of fruit are not candidates for squeezing, therefore you can even initiate a squeeze. You can take the prune and squeeze it, because it doesn't involve a malach, as Rashi explained earlier. So that's the Pshat in the Braisa. Now, if that's the case, if the reason why one can squeeze it is because it's unrelated to malacha, of Dishan Shabbos, Afil Tem Rabbanon. Even if you propose that the Braisa is in accordance with Shitas Rabbanon, that would also make sense, because this wasn't really a point of discussion. Even the Rabbanon would agree to this concept. Kiven Lelav Neschita Ninu, since these fruits are not candidates for Schita, Afil Chatchila, even initiating the squeezing is permissible. So this discussion is unrelated to the discussion of free-flowing juice and concerns about squeezing, because here we're speaking about something which is never squeezed for its juice value. Therefore, it doesn't entail a malacha whatsoever. One can actually go and manually squeeze these fruits without any concern. So this fits with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan. Shma mina Rabbanan, Nishma mina. Indeed, it seems to be obvious that this halacha follows Rabbanan's opinion as well. And therefore, there's no concern when it comes to the Sha'ar Peres regarding free-flowing juice, because he can actually go ahead and squeeze them if he chooses to. Continues the Gemara. Shall base Menashe bar Menachem. So the Braisa related that in this home of Menashe, they would squeeze Hayusecht Meremayim, they would squeeze the pomegranate during the ordinary weekdays to produce juice. And this supports the contention of the Tan of the Braisa that one may not do this on Shabbos, since we find that occasionally it's done. Apparently, this juice is regarded, is reckoned with, has significance, and therefore, squeezing the pomegranate on Shabbos to produce his juice would be asr. Omer of Nachman, halacha, kishol beis Menashe ba Menachem. The halacha indeed follows their practice, meaning since we find that they would do it, apparently this is considered to be production of Jews and it's Asr on Shabbos. Amali Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav challenged Rav Nachman. Menashe ben Menachem Tanu? When the Braisa relates this incident, this practice, this custom of the home of Menashe ben Menachem, is he coming to present an opposing view? Is he a Tana who opposes the Braisa? Why are you saying that Allah follows Menashe ben Menachem? The Tana wasn't bringing this as an opposing view, he's simply bringing it as a support, as a raya, to his opinion. So why do you use that term that Halacha follows Menashe? V'chitei mahalacha ki aitana. The sarla ki shom Menashe b'Menachem. Perhaps you mean to say that the Halacha follows the shita of this Tana, the Tana of the Braisa, who holds that squeezing pomegranates on Shabbos is a problem. In accordance with the minhag of the home of Menashe b'Menachem, who indeed adopted this custom of squeezing pomegranates, which indicates that it is done on occasion, thereby granting chashivas and significance to the juice produced from this pomegranate, therefore prohibiting squeezing the pomegranate on Shabbos. So that's what you meant to say? That we follow the shita of the Braisa, who supports himself by bringing the custom of Menashe ben Menachem? Says the Gemara, Umishum de Savar ke Menashe ben Menachem alach kemoisai? Just because the Braisa agrees with the custom of Menashe, that's why we're meant to follow that Shita? Menashe ben Menachem haveruba da alma? Do they comprise the majority of the world? Just because a single family conducts himself in this manner, squeezes pomegranates to produce his juice, that has the ability to grant the juice of a pomegranate a din of Mashkin. This one family has the ability to determine the status, to establish rules for everybody else. Since generally speaking, people don't squeeze pomegranates for the sake of the juice, perhaps it doesn't have a din of a Mashkin. One family can set the rules for everybody. So it's more in, yes, actually they could. The snan as we find in the Mishnah. Hamakayim koitzim bekerem. So this is regarding the Allah of Kalayim, one may not mix two varieties, you can't plant a vegetable in a vineyard. But what about koitzim, thorns? So the halacha of kalayim applies even to animal feed, which is planted together with the grapes. What about thorns? Are they regarded as animal feed? Hamekayim koitzim bekerem, one who keeps his thorns growing in his vineyard, Reb Lezer mekidesh. It makes it aser because it is considered kalayim, it's considered to be animal feed. V'chachamayim ein mekadesh, it doesn't have the ability to Mekadesh, that's a lashon used by Kalaim to make it usur, eladovar shakamoyu mekaimen. Only something, only a plant which is generally kept, as opposed to thorns, which is not generally kept growing in one's vineyard. V'amar b'chanina, my time with the Rebbeleza. Indeed, what is the reason the Rebbeleza considers this to be Kalaim? People don't keep thorns in their vineyard. It's not considered to be a machal behema. So he said, Shekein ba'arviya, since in this place called Arviya, mekaimen koitzi sodas legamleim. They indeed keep, they grow the thorns in their fields for the sake of feeding their camels. So you see that even a practice, a custom adopted in a specific location has the ability to set rules for everybody else, resulting in these thorns to be reckoned with as machal behema, and making kalayim in the kerem. So you see this concept there as well. Says the Gemara, Midiriya, can that be a proof to our case? The Arviya Astra. Arviya is a location, it's a province. Rashi says, and that's chashivas because it's a rabbim. There's a large number of people living there. So indeed they have the ability to set rules, to set standards. Hachab, however, in our case, where it's just a single family, which has this practice of squeezing, reminding, bakla data, it's a kaladam. His das, his mind, his practice, his custom, his battles nullified, negated. It's a kaladam in contrast to the commonly held practice. Meaning you can't determine the halacha based on a single family in contrast with everybody else's practice. So why would you consider the juice squeezed from a rimoin? Why would you consider it to be mashke? And why can a person not squeeze a rimon on Shabbos? Ella hainu tam, says the Gemara, what indeed is the reason? why Rab Nachman says that we follow the shita that a rimayin can't produce mashkin, and we're concerned about that on Shabbos. Because Rav Chizda, and according to Rav Chizda, the Rav Chizda, as Rav Chizda said elsewhere regarding the halacha of a mikvah, tzrodin shesachtan, if a person squeezed beets, v'nasnum a mikvah, and he placed the juice in a mikvah, and it discolored the mikvah, poislin is a mikvah b'shini mar. It disqualifies the mikvah on account of the discoloration. Now the question here is, beet juice is not a mashka. How can it make the mikvah possible? For lav meis chitaninu, beets are not candidates for squeezing. Therefore, the juice which is squeezed doesn't have a din of a mashka. How could it go ahead and disqualify a mikvah? Elo ma'is lachlameimar. Apparently, you must say that although generally speaking, you're right. Beets are not slated for squeezing. The juice coming out is not considered to be a mashkin. But since this person, this individual, granted significant to this juice, he squeezed it. He likes the juice of the beets. Since he granted chashivas to it, havalu mashka. This juice is considered as regarded as mashka. So since he personally attributed chashivas to it, it attains the status of mashka. Hachinami here as well, when it comes to pomegranates, kivandach shivinu, since a person opted to squeeze them and was makshiv, the juice coming out of it, havalu mashka, indeed, they are regarded as mashka, they attain a status of a beverage, and therefore, one cannot do that on Shabbos. Rav Papa Amar, he disagrees. He says, no, even when a person should squeeze a type of fruit which is generally not squeezed, a prune, a quince, even if he should choose to squeeze it, or a beet, the juice coming out is not considered to be mashke. We work with the standard. If this item is not slated for squeezing, then the juice coming out is not considered to be a beverage. We don't reckon with his machshava, with his personal preference. So why then does Rav Chizda say that beet juice disqualifies a mikvah? Not on account of its mashke status. Because it's something that you cannot produce a mikvah with. It's not water, but neither is it mashkin. It's somewhere in the middle. And therefore, any type of thing which you can't use to make a mikvah with, you can't fill a mikvah with this beet juice, indeed has the ability to disqualify a mikvah by affecting a discoloration of the mikvah. So Rav Papa disagrees with the concept. He says, even something which is not considered a mashke has the ability to disqualify a mikvah. So beet juice disqualifies the mikvah not on account of its mashke status. That's not the case. But rather, because it's not water. It's not something which is suitable to fill a mikvah with. And therefore, when that falls into a mikvah and discolors the mikvah, it makes the mikvah possible. So in summary, regarding squeezing fruit on Shabbos. So Rashi has a lengthy explanation. Rashi and Tosis and other Rishonim present two approaches in our Gemara as follows. So we have three categories. We have Zeisim v'Anavim, which are primary candidates for squeezing. We have the middle level, which are Rimayinim, which are occasionally squeezed to produce juice. We have other fruits, which are apparently never used for this purpose. So it depends why he's squeezing it. If he's squeezing the fruit legufon to soften it, to enhance its flavor, in this case, when it comes to the high category of zeisim anavim, he can't do so, because he might come to actually squeeze it for its juice purpose. Regarding rimayinim, it's asur as well, because there he might also squeeze it for its juice purposes. Regarding other peiros, he can go ahead and crush them legufan merely to soften them, to enhance their flavor. There's no concern of squeezing it for the sake of its juice, because those fruits are never used for their juice purposes. Now regarding squeezing fruits for the sake of mashkin, to extract juice, and regarding zeisim anavim, all agree it's asur. That's a true mashke which he's producing. That's a malacha deraisa. Regarding juice of pomegranates, that's asur as well. Regarding other fruits, we have a machlekes. According to Rav Nachman's approach, it would be awesome, because when a person proceeds to squeeze a fruit, even though it's something which is never squeezed for its juice purposes, Rav Nachman says, you are being machshavit. You are granting significance to the juice and therefore for you it's considered to be a Jewish production and is a malacha and is considered to be asr. Whereas according to our Papa, who disagrees with this concept, he says we have to work with the status of the fruit itself. If this type of fruit is classified as a non-squeezed fruit, something which nobody ever uses for juice production, then there's no concern whatsoever. He can actually go ahead and proceed to squeeze it, even if his intent is to extract juice. He's not doing anything, because the juice extracted does not have a chashivas, a status of mashkin of a beverage. It's merely just squeezing part of the fruit out of itself. He's separating one element of the fruit from the other. That's not akin to disha, to threshing, to taking the grain out of its husk. Here he's simply slicing a fruit into two, so to speak. And therefore, uri mutar l'chatchil. Continues the Gemara. Tanan Hassam, we learned in a Mishnah, in Maseches Mikvois, nofel esoicha yayin eichemitz. If wine or vinegar falls into a mikvah, u moichal, or this juice, this liquid which runs from the olives, Rashi will soon explain what this means. Vishina marav, and these items that fell to the mikveh, they affected a change. They discolored the mikveh puzzle. The mikveh is disqualified. Let's take a look at Rashi describes exactly what this moichel material here is. So Rashi here is on the first wide line. Nofal l'soichay shel mikveh, yayin echemetz, so wine, vinegar, or moichel fell in. What is this moichel? V'hu kemin mayim. It resembles water, it flows from the olives. There are actually three phases, three different varieties of this liquid that exudes from the olives. When he goes and he piles them up, initially in this basket, say warm up, especially ripen, this first stage of meichel juice, flows from the olives. Food sol kamayim, it's clear like water. That certainly is not reckoned like mashka. It has no significance. And therefore all agree, it's not considered to be a beverage. Now after the olives are sitting there for a couple of days, and they sit on each other, they squeeze each other, there's another phase of this liquid that flows. That has more body, more substance. It more resembles oil. Now the third stage is after he already squeezed them, he crushed them. So he crushed them in the oil press. Now the tapuach shel gefes means the pile of olive skins sit around ba'akolim in these ropes that they are tied in in the oil press. Then there's an additional moichel which flows from them. So we have three phases. The initial one is clear like water. Then we have the middle stage where it's a bit more cloudy and resembles oil. Then we have the third stage, which is after the pressing. So the Mishnah says that if this moichal falls into the mikveh and it discolors the mikveh, it makes it possible. Says the Gemara, man tana de moichal mashku. Who's the tana that holds that moichal is considered to be a mashka? Has the ability to disqualify a mikveh. Amar Abayi Rabbi Yaakovi. The sign is we learned in the Brisa. Rabbi Yaakov, Moichel Erika Mashke. Moichel has a din of a Mashke. Uma Tam Amru. If so, why did the Chacham say that the initial phase of Moichel is not reckoned with? Moichel Yotze Mitchila. That first stage of Moichel is Tar. Why? Because he's not pleased with its presence. He has no use for it. He doesn't really want it. And therefore, it's not considered to be a Mashke. As Rashi explains, that's simply clear. Some clear substance which has no significance and therefore has no din of a mashk. Reb Shimon Oimer, Moichel ainek mashk. No, Moichel is not regarded as a mashk. If so, ma'atam amru. If so, why did the Chacham say Moichel yotze mi'ikul beis habat tamid? Why did they say that the juice, this Moichel, this liquid, which is flowing from the ikul beis habat, as Rashi described the third stage where the olives are contained in this rope basket, so to speak, in the Beis Habad, in the olive press. Why did the moichel coming there is tame? All agree that's called a mashkel. Fi she efshaloi beloy tzuchtzuche shemen, because it's inevitable that there's some droplets of oil mixed into that moichel. Therefore, the reason why it's a mashkel is not an account of the moichel itself, which is really insignificant, but an account of the oil contained therein. So Rabbi Yaakov says the first stage of Moichel is nothing. Rabbi Shimon says the last stage of Moichel, all agree, has a din of Mashke. So what is the Machloikas pertaining to? My Binayu. What is the difference between the two Shittas? Says the more very simple, Ike Binayu. What is the difference between the two Shittas? The Asi Basar, it's a Tzasa. Regarding that middle stage of the juice of Moichel, which emanates after the olives have been sitting a while and pressing each other, so it's that middle ground there, what Rashi described, which is Karv L'Shemen, it's somewhat cloudy, it has more substance. Rabbi Yaakov says that's called Mashke, and Rabbi Shimon says it's not. So getting back to the halacha of a mikvah, so if this Moichel, this middle stage Moichel fell to the mikvah, it disqualifies the mikvah, and apparently Abaye says, whose shita is this? It's Rabbi Yaakov, who considers this to be a mashke and has the ability to disqualify a mikvah. Rav Amar, no! That's not on account of that reason. Mashum David Dover, Shein Oysen, hey man of mikvah. It's not because it's considered a mashke, because even if something is a non-mashke, it has the ability to disqualify a mikvah. Upaislasa mikvah b'shini mara. Because it's something which is Ein Oysen man of mikvah, it's something which is, can't be used to fill a mikvah, it's not water. So, since it's not water, and it goes and it enters the mikvah and discolors the mikvah, it will apostle the mikvah, will disqualify the mikvah. So there's a difference of opinion here. Abaye claims that only something which has a din of a mashke can disqualify the mikvah. And therefore, apparently the moichel, which disqualifies the mikvah, is based on Shita's Rabbi Yaakov, who regards it as a mashke. Rabbi says no. Even something which is a non-mashke entity has the ability to make a mikvah apostle, because it's not mime, it's not water. So it's not water, nor is it a mashke, it's somewhere in the middle. But since it discolors the mikvah, it will disqualify the mikvah. And it seems like Abaye and Rava actually corresponding to the discussion we had earlier regarding the beetroots, the two reasons for them disqualifying the mikvah. Continues the Gemara. Omar Bida Mashmo, another halacha regarding squeezing fruit juice. So we learned that squeezing grapes to produce juice is considered to be a melacha because he is extracting a beverage element, a mashkin element, producing something from the food element. So it's similar to extracting the grain from the encasement, and therefore it's a melacha. Amar Vida Mashmo, Soichet Adam Eshkol Shalanovim. One may squeeze a cluster of grapes, L'Soicha Kedera. If he's doing it into a pot which is full of food, of solid food, but he can't do it into a bowl. From the words of our Rebbe Shmo, we will learn as follows. A person can milk a goat into a pot of food, but not into a bowl. Now what is the reason for this halacha? Apparently Shmo holds liquid, juice, which is coming for the sake of food. It's going into a food item. It's going to be used as an ingredient to enhance the flavor and texture of this food. That is the din of oichel. It is no longer regarded as a juice, as a mashke, as a beverage. It attains the status of oichel because it's coming for the sake of oichel. Therefore, there's no concern regarding squeezing this on Shabbos. He's not separating mashke from oichel. He's not producing a beverage from a food. Rather, this juice which is coming out is regarded as oichel because it's coming for the sake to enhance food. So it has a status of an oichel, and therefore he's not doing anything. He's not producing one type of element from the other. He's simply separating two elements of food from each other. The grape is a food element, and likewise the juice coming out of the grape is regarded as a food element. So there's no malacha taking place. Continues the Gemara. Masif Rami Bachama. So he asks the Kasha from a Mishnah in Taharis. Zov shecholav sa'ez. So Zov, who is tamei, who is milking a goat, hacholav tamei. The cholav is tamei since it was moved around, was handled by the Zov. Now, apparently we're speaking about under all circumstances, even if he's milking it into a food dish. Vi amris, if you say mashka bolo oichle, oichlu, mashka, which is coming for the sake of food, is regarded as food. We know that food could only be mekabel tuma once it is mukhshel lekabel tuma. Once it got moist, it got wet, and one of those shiva mashkin we discussed earlier, that enables the food to be mekabel tuma, to receive tuma. This milk, which is going into food, is regarded as an oichel. It can't become tummy unless it undergoes heksher. It gets wet from one of the mashkin. Says the Gemara, but my iskasha, this milk, why is it tummy? Through the handling of the zav, it's food, it needs heksher. What provided heksher for the milk? Says the Gemara, k'da'ar Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan stated elsewhere, betipa meluchlechas apiadad, through the drop of milk, which is present on the nipple itself, so it's moistening the nipple. Hachanam here as well, betipa meluchlechas apiadad, the tipa which is moistening, which is sitting on the nipple, that's not going to the food, that's staying there. That is considered to be a mashka, and therefore the milk flowing through that drop of milk, so although that milk flowing through is considered oichel, but it gets moist, it gets wet, through contact with that drop of milk sitting on the nipple itself, which is a mashka, and therefore the milk coming through it receives heksher and becomes susceptible to receiving tumor. Masr Ravina, so Ravina asked the kasha for a Mishnah in Taharis. Tumei mace, shesochad zeis ha'anavim. A person that became tamei through a mace, so he's an avatuma, he decided to squeeze olives or grapes. So what is the status of the juice that's being extracted? Kebeitza mechavenus tor. So if he's crushing an amount of fruit which equals the volume of a beitza, so it's exactly a kebeitza, then the juice coming out is tor. Why? Because we know that food which is tamei can only transfer tumma if it has, the food which is tummy has the volume of a kibbutz. So the juice coming out of this fruit, since as soon as that first drop comes out, what happens to the kibbutz of food? It diminishes. It minimizes its size. It becomes less than a kibbutz because it only began as exactly a kibbutz. So once it loses a drop of its juice, drop of its content, it lessens. It becomes less than a kibbutz. So it doesn't have the ability to transfer tumma to the juice. Therefore, the juice remains tar. Kebeitza mechavenas tar. Ho yoysa mekebeitza tummy. But if he's crushing an amount of grapes which equal a larger volume than a kebeitza, in this case, the juice emanating becomes tummy because it is in contact with this fruit volume which is greater than a kebeitza and has the ability to transfer tumma to the juice. Now again, we're speaking about under all circumstances. Apparently, even if he's squeezing the juice into a food, if you say that juice which is coming for the sake of food is regarded as food and not beverage, so then it needs to be mukhshar. The food which is coming out cannot become tummy just as is. It needs to first undergo the process of hekshar. How did that food become hukshar kabotumah? How did the juice coming out of this grape get hekshar? Who moisted the blubum? Farklos, Ravino actually asked the question. He himself answered, was speaking apparently where he's squeezing it into a bowl, in which case the juice coming out is not coming for the sake of food, and is considered to be a beverage, a mashkin, and therefore does not need heksher, as we know that mashkin can become tamei as is. They don't need to undergo the process of heksher. Therefore, this juice coming out of the tamei fruit will receive tamei from the fruit, and therefore it's not a kasha on Shmuel. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We began our discussion regarding liquids that have the status of a mashka, of a beverage, and can become tummy. Two examples are cholov and damaka, milk and the blood of a wound of an isha, they are considered to be mashkin. The milk produced from an animal, according to Rabbi Akiva, is considered to be a mashkin, according to Chachamim. That's only provided that it was produced l'rotzen, willingly, and with contentment. The dam of a wound of a behemoth is not considered to be a mashkin. Regarding juice that is freely flowing from food on Shabbos, can one drink that juice? Or perhaps are we concerned it's going to squeeze the fruit? So the Gemara classified three categories. We have zeisim, vanavim, olives, and grapes, which are generally slated for juice production. In this case, it's also to use that juice for concern that it's going to squeeze it. Regarding other types of fruits, which are never used for the sake of their juice, in that case, there's no concern whatsoever. You can use the free-flowing juice. Regarding that middle category, tusim, v'rimonim, berries and pomegranates, which occasionally are used for juice production. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it depends. If he stored them for the sake of eating them, then there's no concern of squeezing, and it's mutter to use the free-flowing juice. According to Chachamim, in this case as well, it's asur. Perhaps he'll change his mind, decide to squeeze them. If he stored them for the sake of mashkin, to produce juice from them, or even stam, without any specific intention in mind, the juice would be asur. What about actually squeezing fruit on Shabbos? When it comes to zeisim v'anavim, which are slated for this purpose, in this case, if he squeezes it l'gufan to enhance their flavor, and certainly to extract the mashkin, it would be asr. Regarding remining, which are occasionally used to produce juice, So one cannot crush them legufan to soften them, to enhance their flavor. Neither can he extract juice from them. Regarding other types of fruits which are never used for juice production, one can crush them in order to enhance their flavor. Regarding extracting juice from them, according to Rav Nachman, it's also because the fact is he is attributing significance to this juice, therefore it's considered to be taking out, producing juice. And as a malach, according to Rav Papa, in this case as well will be mutter. And the Gemara concluded in the name of Shmuel that the mashke, which is bal oichel, which is coming for the sake of enhancing food, that juice is considered to be oichel, and therefore there's no malacha taking place because he's merely separating one portion of the food from the other.